If your knees check the weather before you do, time to check out Joint Relief Institute. Fast, FDA-approved pain relief covered by Medicare. Call 708-888-0000 as in zero pain.
It has been over 10 years since Michelle Faber's critically acclaimed novel, The Crimson Petal and the White. And now comes the book of strange new things. Michelle, welcome.
Welcome.
So, you are welcome. Thanks. I want to start a little bit with identity because you live in Scotland, right? Many years lived in Australia, born in Holland, the Netherlands. And from what I read at one time or another, each of them claims you as a Dutch writer or a Scottish writer or an Australian writer. And I just wonder what you make of that.
Well, I don't feel that I really have a homeland. And I think you can probably see that coming out in some of the fiction. But nationalism is a pretty alien concept to me.
Right.
And I guess if I'm anything, I feel European. But then, you know, a lot of the culture I like is American, all the comics, and a lot of the music I like is German. So, yeah, I don't really have roots, I don't think.
Do you have a sense of home anywhere?
No, and in fact, there's a couple of issues going on with me. My memory is like a window in a train, and it just moves as the train moves. So as I get older, I lose all the memories from the earlier years. Uh-huh. And the older I get, the less access I have to my childhood and teenage and young adult times. And you're catching me just a very short time after my wife died, and we both had to face up to the fact that, you know, as I now grow older and she's dead, I will inevitably forget a lot of our earlier times together, and that was very painful for me and obviously a challenge for her. And that, I think, fed into this new book, the Book of Strange New Things, this whole thing of memory and what we can hold on to and what we can't hold on to.
Well, we're jumping ahead a little bit of my roadmap for this, but that's okay because
we can get back to your roadmap.
That's right. We don't need a roadmap, but that's exactly what happens to some of these characters in this book, right? Peter, the minister who leaves England, leaves his wife B to evangelize with these aliens on this planet Oasis.
Yeah.
When he's up there, it's a phenomenon that the others who've lived there are familiar with, but he has to begin to grasp is that people forget. They just forget things. They forget things about their previous life.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is exactly what you were explaining, the same sort of thing.
Yeah. I mean, in all my books, I'm trying to find, you know, thrilling and page turning embodiments or metaphors of issues that we're all dealing with. Because obviously, you know, I could have written a novel about a family who have to deal with their parents getting Alzheimer's and no longer remembering stuff. And novels like that can be superb, but they're not the kinds of novels I can write.
Right.
I need to, with those big issues, I need to marry them to a concept that is really out there in every sense of the word, that really takes you on a journey into somewhere strange. And well, then I can deal with those issues.
Well, let's get back to the map then. So we have Peter and B, this couple in England. He's a minister, and he takes this mission to travel to another planet to minister to the alien life form there, right?
The native population.
The alien's the wrong word? Yeah.
Well, he and one of the characters have a discussion.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
So, I mean, at one point, this is very much a love story between the two of them, right?
Yeah.
She rescued him, and then he leaves her.
Yeah.
Talk to me about that.
Well, you know, when I first got together with my wife, I was a fringe dweller, shall we say, and very, very insular, not very socialized. And she connected me with a lot of things and made me more more fully human, if you like. And I had the raw talent, but she made my writing a lot more nuanced and humane. And the distance that that we had to cope with once she became really ill. I mean, she was living on planet Cancer, and I wasn't.
Right.
You can't go there with that person. Only they can go there because they're the ones with the illness. So one of the things that the book is about is that huge distance between two people who love each other, but one is going somewhere very, very far away that the other can't go. And I embodied that with Bia having to stay on Earth and deal with all the stuff that's going on down here, and him being up there having his ministering adventure.
In I used the word alien before, but I want to talk a little bit about alienation, because, you know, Peter leaves Bia and flies first to Florida, which will be his launch pad.
Yeah.
I don't know if I mean it as a compliment, but I don't know if a writer wants to hear that reading his book made the reader incredibly lonely.
Uh-huh.
But I don't, you did, and maybe it's because it wasn't strictly about a parent whose grandparents were losing their memory or something, that it was a little bit more fantastical. But this idea of him landing in Florida in incredible heat and really being unprepared for where he was headed gave me such a sense of loneliness that, well, I mean, congratulations for that. That's a success.
I'm glad I did that. With a lot of my work, the way it starts, it doesn't start with an idea or characters. It starts with me having an ambition to make you feel a particular
right.
way. And then I have to figure out what tools I can use to make you feel that way. And that's when I conceive the story, and that's when I get the characters. It's to take you to that emotional and spiritual place.
So you did it. when he arrives at Oasis, he again, I'm impressed by how little Peter really knew about what was ahead of him.
Well, have you ever read any books written by missionaries?
No, I haven't. I don't think I have.
I've read a stack of them, and they are tremendously naive about what awaits them.
Okay, then.
Because, of course, you know, they're in the hands of God, and God will take care of everything. And they're also so, you know, bullishly confident that what they have to offer is...
that they're doing the right thing.
...is incredibly valuable to these people. So... yeah, there's a huge ignorance factor and a huge innocence factor, and that interesting balance of the purest intentions and very worrying sort of lacks in their empathy.
Maybe almost a willful ignorance.
Yes.
Right? If I
sure.
don't ask, I won't know.
Yeah, yeah.
When he gets there, go ahead.
And Peter's wife is the sort of person who would ask questions, and that's why she doesn't get the okay to accompany
her. She wasn't chosen.
Exactly. They know damn well that if she went there, she would be trouble. So that's why he gets to go.
When he gets there, I mean, as the reader probably, or as I wrote the story in my mind, he's going to have a tough sell with
yeah.
these natives. But that's not the case.
No.
He comes upon Jesus Lover 1 and Jesus Lover 2.
Exactly.
And 63.
You've got this native population that are already totally sold on the idea of Christianity. I mean, one of the things I enjoy doing in all my books, I did something similar in Under the Skin, which at the beginning looks as if it's going to be a thriller where you've got some sort of serial killer woman, and then the novel takes you somewhere very, very different. I like the idea of luring people into a narrative and then thinking that, you know, that they know how it's going to go. They can see the setup. And they, as you said, they write the book in their head
right.
as they're reading it. And then it just confounds them at every turn. It, you know, whatever way they think it's going to pan out, it's different.
What's nice about the way you wrote it, too, is that it wasn't jarring, right? I mean, I was wrong, but I wasn't kicked in the head when I realized I was wrong.
Uh-huh.
I was gently brought somewhere else.
Yeah, I want the reader to get the unexpected and to be confounded and frustrated, but on the other hand, I want them to be immensely entertained and to really care and to keep turning the pages because they need to know what happened. If it was just an exercise in author manipulation of the reader. That's, I think that's facile and cheap. You know, it's like horror movies where there's a very loud noise which makes you jump out of your seat. It's very easy to do that to people.
Right.
All you have to do is have it quiet for 2 minutes and then have, you know, an explosion going on or a door slam. It's no great craft to that. It's just manipulation.
And Michelle, those aren't the jumps or the leaps that we remember, right? I don't know if Peter says it in the book or if it was a narration, but the line that I ripped the page so that I would find it later. Belief was a place that people didn't leave until they absolutely must.
Yeah.
Which seems to me to capture what you're writing here.
Uh-huh.
Right? Am I correct or am I?
Yes. Yes.
So expound on that a little bit for me.
I get the impression that in the USA, this surprises me actually because there's a lot more religious faith in this country than there is in the UK. But I gather that here, as in the UK, there's been quite a rash lately of atheist books.
Right, true.
Books about how cool it is to be an atheist. And there's still this notion that the human race is eventually going to evolve away from religious faith because we'll just get too smart to believe in those sort of childhood stories and we'll evolve into proper adults who don't need God, who don't need faith. And I don't think it's going to happen. I think human beings need faith and they need a sense that some bigger entity is taking an interest and taking care of them. And true atheism, which is where you really believe that there's nothing out there and that we're just atoms floating around randomly and we have our little spate on Earth and that's it. That's such a scary existence that you can't expect that of most people.
Right.
And what I've always been interested in, and I myself don't have religious faith, is the emotional and moral consequences of what happens when you take God out of the picture. How do people cope? And when they're really tested, when they lose everything, or they're at that point that you pinpointed where belief is no longer possible, what they do then, what can they console themselves with, what can they hold on to?
The Book of Strange New Things, Michelle Faber. It was wonderful to talk to you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.